This is It Takes Two. Amy Eiler, JJ Gordon, and on the phone line now we have Dr. David Tack. He is an English teacher from Grand Forks Central High School, which is weird to say because I want to just say that you're from MSUM still. In my mind, you're still at MSUM, Dr. Tack. I can't get that out of my brain.
That's fine. I proudly take that association, so that's not a problem.
Well, and I think of him as Mr. Tack from Fargo South High.
So good to chat with you in person, JJ. Good to hear from you.
Well, it's good to hear from you as well. By the way, I love living vicariously through your social media accounts because it looks like you are probably the most active mover and shaker I know out of any educator that I am friends with.
Well, I don't know if educators are known for being movers or shakers, so that's a pretty low bar right there in and of itself. So I don't know all the wild and wacky teacher things, but I do appreciate that. Means a lot, you know. That's pretty cool. I'll take that. I'll wear that badge proudly.
Well, and I know that 2002 Fargo South graduates still speak very highly of you as well. So 20 years later.
Nothing but love. I mean, just nothing but love at that time. And I miss them all. So whomever you talk to, please give them my greeting and tell them that I think of everybody. So I appreciate that.
Okay. You also, and we want to get talking about online learning, but I really briefly want to say that in your personal life too, you've had some big things going on and you're not exactly moving and shaking a lot this summer, as I understand.
Unless that means sleeping excessively, if that's what the cool kids are calling that now. Yeah, that's this is probably the most active I've been in about a month is this phone conversation. So if I fall asleep halfway through, I apologize.
We understand. Can we talk about it? Can we talk about the big news?
Sure. It was in the paper, so I guess it's no real secret, so it's all right.
And you actually donated an organ to a family member.
That's right, and that's not just a big piano. I did give a kidney to my cousin. Yeah,
that's incredible.
I'm downsizing. I'm at that point in my life. I got too much stuff in my. So you know, I had to just get rid of one. That so there we go.
Bless you. That's amazing.
It's quite the diet, isn't it? Like you lose a pound as fast as you can imagine.
Seriously disappointing. I got weighed on my, you know, when I left, only 2 pounds for a kidney. I was like, oh, you could have sliced a couple more things out of there too. I needed it. So, but you know, I'll take the two right now, really.
So when, for whatever reason, yesterday, when I was thinking about how we're going to move forward with this online learning, we were actually talking to a professor on air, Ryan Jackson from MSUM.
Mm-hmm.
And
nice guy.
I asked him, what does the next year look like? And he said, isn't that the $1 million question? And I thought to myself, you know who has opinions about online learning? Dr. David Tack has opinions about online learning. Let's call him.
I appreciate that, and I do, and I appreciate the call now that I'm kind of approaching it from a K-16 approach right now, seeing it from in my household, having a kindergartner and a fifth grader, and then teaching it now at the high school level, and then having taught it at the post-secondary level for 10 years, basically. I mean, I really, really, really have been marinating in what online learning looks like throughout the levels, and it's pretty powerful.
So tell us your experience with it, because I know you used to have some pretty strong opinions about online learning and that they've gone through some changes.
I still think that what I'm concerned with still is a concern. I think that they're working better. Like, I think removing the social aspect of learning is hard no matter what age and what environment. One of the things that I hear more and more and more is that either anecdotally or through my experience, is that although they may have gotten the stuff out of online learning, they do miss the people with whom they're doing the learning. You know, talking anecdotally with my colleagues who are just absolutely barnstormer teachers. I mean, I've just been very lucky in my time of my 20 plus years of teaching to work with just some fascinating, just amazing educators. I mean, they just said it too. I mean, what makes them good in the physical environment is not how you translate to the digital environment. And that's challenging, like adjusting a lesson by looking to see that the students aren't getting it and then changing things up. I mean, you don't have that ability to do that. Not having the ability to put on, I call it just academic blinders. For 7 hours, we have them. And we might lose them to an Instagram post here or there, but basically for 7 hours, they're marinating in the educational experience. For online learning, it's all on them. I mean, we can do you could have the Walt Disney Digital Teacher of the Year, and it doesn't matter if the student chooses not to log on or chooses to log on and play Fortnite. So, I mean, or having the thousand other things going on in their lives. So I think that still continues to be the major challenge. And we saw that within our learning.
I also, you know, from what I've heard from my friends is that they said, you know, not all homes are built the same. When you go into a school, you're going into a neutral territory for all students. But for some of them, their home just isn't conducive to being able to fully focus on what's going on for those hours and hours and hours of education. So even, like you said, even if you have the most energetic, amazing teacher, which so many have put so much into, I definitely don't fault any teachers here, you're still competing with that home environment and that extra stimuli.
100%, JJ, and that's really is what the a lot of the concerns are. I mean, the teachers, we you're right. I mean, we really had an art, and no one is at fault. I mean, we kind of got the orders when we got the orders, and we found out when we were shutting things down. And you know, although I'm not a spokesperson for the Grand Forks Public Schools, the Grand Forks Public Schools did a phenomenal job from what I experienced. I mean, from the leadership top down, they really did. I mean, it was communication is everything, and that's online learning as well. I mean, they let us know. The teachers had about a 2-ish week window to begin moving an entire quarter online, with probably close to 100% of the teachers having zero online teaching experience. A lot of them may have been online learners as an undergrad or taking grad classes, and that's different. But to be a teacher is an entirely different ballgame. And in 2 weeks, they brought out, you know, our leadership had the academic coaches and the tech coaches come in and introduce us to online software that some teachers were using, but now we all had to use. And then they're saying, this is how we record online lectures, and this is how we be engaging. And again, trying to think about and talking, and some of the challenges was, you know, hearing my colleagues say, you know, what I do in my classroom, you know, I have my game plan, but I play it by ear and I adjust by what's needed. I mean, here, I just have to put out there and think. And I equated it to being when I was in radio. I said, you know, you get behind a mic and you're basically, it's like talking in a closet. And you just hope that what you're saying is reaching out there and getting them. And you can't adjust and see people's reactions and change your line of the story. And I mean, that really became a challenge. But I mean, the communication within the Grand Forks Public Schools continued to be good. And that tended to be a problem. That was one of the things that they got at and they really stressed here too was the students, what's happening outside is not equal playing field. We're going to do our best to make it equal and give every kid a computer, but that doesn't mean they have internet access. And they have internet access, it doesn't mean it's good internet access. And if they have internet access, there might be three kids in a household who all have a Zoom class meeting at 9 o'clock. Then what do you do? You know, and so there were a lot of these things that became issues, and you really had to be super flexible and understanding. And what looked kind of like, there are little mini implosions throughout and things, but I mean, people were really good about rolling with it and understanding and just adjusting as they wanted and made it as best of a learning environment as they could.
Dr. Tack, let me ask you this. One huge aspect of education, in my opinion, is being able to acknowledge the struggle that some students are undergoing in certain classes. I imagine on your end, it must be incredibly difficult to figure out who's having trouble that could be easily addressed when all you have for a real metric is a small video screen and how they're performing on worksheets and tests.
You know, that was my problem where I think what Amy was talking about, where I had some really strong opinions, because that's such an important part of the teaching and learning process for me forever, was exactly that. Not just pushing those kids who are doing well to continue to do better, but to help those kids who are struggling and bring them up. And then, you know, if that means doing something extra, working with them, and like I said, having those 7 hours of focused academic time allowed us to do that, hold those kids after, adjust your classroom environment, you know, pull a kid out of a study hall, do whatever you need. Where in here, that's really, really difficult to do. So I'm going to go back, and again, not as a spokesperson for Grand Forks Public Schools, but I tell you what, Grand Forks Public Schools, and I'll speak from Grand Forks Central, our principals and John Strandell and the team, that was one of the things they communicated from the beginning. You know, they said, we really have to stay on top of those kids that are falling behind. We had a bunch of different ways. We had all these interventions where we would intervene. The counselor would talk. The principal would talk. Multiple teachers would reach out. And we really, really worked hard for those kids. And it wasn't necessarily, it didn't correlate to kids who necessarily struggled during the quote-unquote regular school times, struggled outside, because it was interesting. Some kids really blossomed in this online environment. They liked having it, you know, learn as they wanted to. And I saw some kids really blossom who didn't. But then I saw kids who were like high A's throughout their classes suddenly really struggling as well. And again, it just wasn't their environment, and they missed the school and they missed that. And that was really, really hard, trying to reach out for them and bringing them back. And I mean, they're just struggling with the challenges. And then, you know, the challenges of what was going on outside. Some of these kids had to work extra time, so they were picking up in their jobs, and that was a challenge for them. Some of the kids, their parents were gone all day, so they were trying to do their school work and take care of brothers and sisters and help them out. So, yeah, life was really kicking a lot of these families in the teeth and trying to make it work. And as best we could without being there, I mean, it's hard when you're there, and it's monumentally challenging when you're not. But that still doesn't mean that we weren't aware and didn't try and be as compassionate as we could. And I agree with you, JJ. That is one of the challenges of online learning that makes me that I have a major issue with.
As we're having this conversation, I just got a press release from NDSU that President Bresciani is going to be taking questions regarding an announcement today at 2:30. The announcement is, and I'll just read it. I'm reading it sort of on the fly here. NDSU is committed to a live and in-person fall semester, and I know you are excited about returning to campus to start classes. This is a note to students. You probably also have some concerns about what exactly that return to campus will look like. I am writing to you today to share some extremely good news that will impact your fall semester and help reduce the risks to students, faculty, and staff. Moments ago, NDSU received final approval for a grant of nearly $20 million to help us with our COVID-19 planning. Let me take a few minutes to discuss how we intend to use this money. They go on now to talk about the cornerstone of our planning revolves around a hybrid system of delivering classes known as a high-flex educational model. The grant enables us to use technology to convert nearly every single classroom on campus into a room that can seamlessly integrate in-person teaching with remote instruction in a close to a normal manner as possible. So the interesting, and I'm sure we're going to hear more about this today, it sounds like NDSU is going to both intend to have class in person and then also remotely, or accommodate both of those. Have you heard of this high flex educational model? I know I'm reading it for the first time, and I'm just kind of pop quizzing you.
No. That isn't anything really new. I mean, if you think about it, it was kind of the rudiments. My wife and Yulin had that option kind of well before, in the early days of that, where, if you remember, like rural classes could do like through video conferencing, take foreign language and whatnot as well, where you might get a teacher from Fargo while you have a classroom in these small rural communities. And this is something that higher ed has kind of been moving towards, and where they're at an advantage in my time there, and where I kind of just as I was mentioning to you off air, one of the things that drove me away is that I was just teaching more and more online, and that's the model to reach more students. They're used to that, and that's the teaching model. It's become more and more.
You know, that point has been brought up so many times over this, Dr. Tack, is that rural schools are actually ahead of urban schools when it comes to all of this, because they have given every single student a laptop. They have implemented some kind of learning like that. They just have more resources.
That's right. And they have. And they saw that. And that's good, where And I think that that's where effectiveness is coming in, where I saw that when I was teaching in Fargo and working at MSUM as well, too. I thought they did a really, really nice job that they would bring in all of the educational leaders from the community at MSUM and have, they called it the Dean's Council, or the Ed Department there. And they would share what was working for them. And I really like that. And I think more, and I see that, and I don't think that that's unique to them. I just saw it in action there, where I think more and more they have to, I mean, people just think that because of the bigger districts, they're the place and there's a lot of good things going on. But you're right, Amy. There's a lot of great things going on at our smaller districts that that we have been for a while and continue to, that we can learn from it. This is no exception right here, too. And I think that you're right, that stress test as well. I mean, you have, on a smaller scale, they were able to see, can we, with our smaller class sizes, have this one-on-one technology, and how does this work, and train a smaller staff in order to learn and how to do that, and they did, and they are ahead of speed, and I think that we could really tap into them as our experts in the area.
If I made you get into predicting the future, could you see our public schools, our high schools, our grade schools going to a model like we're talking about for NDSU?
You know what? I do, and I think that that's probably one of the options for this fall that districts are going into. I mean, I know that in reading online and talking to my colleagues, I got friends who teach in the cities. I still got dear friends in the Fargo area around here. I mean, there's multiple models that schools are brainstorming right now. That very well may be a possibility, because I mean, I'm in one of the largest classrooms at Grand Forks Central, and there's no way, if I have a class full, can we adequately socially distance where's needed. And so I think that that really is one of the possibilities, is going for where you have some students there in person while others are online. And I think that that's definitely one of the models that they're looking at. And I know higher ed, they've been already doing that. I mean, I taught grad classes like that. I had students in person while I had Zooming in students in Korea, in Washington State at the same time. So, I mean, that's nothing new, but I do see that. I think that this spring showed us that can be done. I don't know how effectively it was, but it can be done. And I think that teachers are, I think, a little bit more capable, and people are a little less reluctant. But I think everything's much better if we can be back in person, of course. But I think that that's absolutely one of the possibilities. And I think we're going to be seeing that, Amy, on a K through 16 level. Probably not surprising.
Dr. Tack, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're so awesome. Thanks for having me.
Happy healing.
Oh, thanks. I'm going to go take a nap. This might be out.
Thanks, Dr. Tack.